I want to move on now to the summer programme, formerly known as the July Provision, which is a scheme offered by some special schools, some DESH schools and some primary schools who have special classes for autistic children. It runs for 4 weeks in the month of July. It's regarded as being of huge benefit to children who have additional and often complex needs. This year, the primary school funding for this programme has been cut from €45 per child per week to €30, and it's been getting reaction from Adam Harris, who's the CEO of the national autism charity As I Am.
Well, I think it's very disappointing to see that cut. There's a recognition that all costs have gone over and up in recent times. So as a result, any cut to the availability of the non-staffing cost grant is going to have an impact in terms of the activities that can potentially be offered on the programme. And of course, many of the children accessing the summer programme don't get the benefit of other summer activities, summer camps that non-autistic or neurotypical children may be able to enjoy. So I think that's very regrettable, particularly when we're trying to, I suppose, encourage as many schools as possible to participate. And particularly in a context where we know every year there's a significant underspend in the summer programme. That said, I think it's important to recognise this isn't just a funding issue. If we look at special schools, for example, where the grant has not reduced from the €60 that was in place 2 years ago, we're still seeing relatively low levels of uptake. We're still seeing many schools opt out of the programme before details are even published year on year. So I think we really need to ask ourselves, why is that? And I think we need to be mindful that there's still time for schools to sign up to the programme. So I suppose my main message this morning would be, if a school has said they won't participate, if a school has said they haven't indicated to families yet, we would really urge them to consider to provide the programme. But I think there is a reality. There's been significant reform of the programme over the last number of years, including, for example, putting in place additional supports for schools that wish to participate. But it would appear that the department is reaching a capacity point. As long as the programme remains voluntary, children who really need this predictability, this support, this routine during the summer period, which is both important for the young person and the family, will lose out. So we need to stop addressing this issue in silos. We need to stop thinking about this issue just in the context of schools, teachers and SNAs. And we really need to see a whole of government plan around how we can provide this much needed support to children during the summer period, using things like student therapists, HSE supports, other agencies that can provide the support. What is particularly regrettable is when we see schools not providing the programme, but then also not making their premises available, also at times renting out their premises for use, for example, for private summer camps.
And can I ask you, you mentioned their uptake and the voluntary nature of the programme. You're talking about there is a less than optimal uptake by the schools themselves, and it's voluntary for the schools to opt in. Is that what you mean by that? Rather than, I suppose, parents and families not taking up available places.
This is correct. So schools, teachers, SNAs, it's not a compulsory programme to be provided. And unfortunately, year on year, we see many schools opt out before details of the programme are even available. And where the, I suppose, staffing isn't available within the education system, we have to find other solutions, because it's simply not acceptable to have a situation where autistic children are left without support for the summer period. And what we see is a knock-on effect on that in terms of family life, but also, for example, in terms of more people needing access to emergency respite. As someone who accessed the programme myself as a child, I know the impact that it can make. And we really need to make sure that every child, irrespective of where they live or the schools in their locality, is able to access this much needed support.
And should it be compulsory, in your view, then, for schools to provide it?
In my view, absolutely. I recognise that that is a longer structural change that needs to happen. It involves industrial relations, for example. But it's my firm view that if this is a support needs for autistic young people, which it is, it should be provided. Where schools aren't providing it, the state itself has an obligation. We see in other European countries such as Malta, where the state plays a much more hands-on coordinating role in putting on the programme, in actually taking over the running of schools to deliver the programme where it's required. And that's, I think, where we need to go.
And could you briefly just sketch out what is the benefit? You said you benefited from this yourself, but the benefit to the children themselves and to families, what are those benefits?
So I suppose for autistic people, routine and predictability is really important. So a long period without the predictability and all the supports that go at school is extremely challenging. It can lead to a chance where people don't have the opportunity to maintain and to develop various life skills across the summer period. For many families, for many young people, the summer is a very exciting period. Just this week, I was supporting a family whose child was told, because he has additional needs, he's not welcome at his private summer camp in his locality. So autistic people face so much discrimination in accessing those opportunities. So it's really important that the state provides an opportunity, not just in terms of supporting a person in terms of their support needs, but ensuring that our young people have the same chance to enjoy the summer period that every other young person or family would take for granted.
Can I ask you just on a separate issue about a contribution made in the Dáil by the independent TD for Tipperary, Matty McGrath, during the week? He was referring to his brother, who is a doctor, whom he said questioned what had caused autism. Here's what Matty McGrath said to the Dáil.
My late brother was a paediatrician of some renown, and he came home from Africa and talked to me and others about the first time I heard the words autism or dyspraxia and dyslexia. I don't know when he was, that's around the late 90s. And he was a champion of children from all over the country. And he was writing and battling all the time for those special needs. But he was questioning at that time, what is causing all of this? And we can never correct anything. I learn from mistakes, and we don't look at the mistake and how we made it and what happened. But there must be a need and understanding as to how the explosion and of autism. And I don't make little of anyone, boy or girl, that has it. It's so tough. An early diagnosis is so important, but we must examine why. The last time I raised this here, I was berated by a certain Mr. Harris, not the politician, the other guy, as I am. Adam, I think, was his name. Because when I was going to school in the town court in Benadrochan, and certainly some others here, we didn't see these issues. There was some, but nothing like the amount is now.
That was Matty McGrath. He mentioned you by name in that Dáil contribution, Adam Harris. What did you make of what he said and the issue he raised, speculating about the cause and the prominence of autism in society in years gone by?
The reality is, whatever conversations he might have been having in the late 1990s, our understanding of autism has totally transformed, thankfully, since that period. The reality is that this idea of, you know, talking about the cause of autism, referring to it in medical terms as an explosion in such negative terms, that isn't harmless. But I think where I take the most exception to the comments is this idea of presenting autistic people as the issue or the issues. The issue isn't being autistic. The issue is living in a society in which there is attitudinal and environmental barriers. And I'm afraid that Deputy McGrath's comments really bring those to life. You know, there's a discussion that he didn't meet autistic people when he was younger or when he was in school. That is because in this country for a very long time, we hid difference. We had one of the highest rates of institutionalization per capita in the globe. I really wish that Deputy McGrath would think more before he spoke. And I suppose really essentially used the autistic community, a minority group within our society, as a political football for conspiracy theorists.
It was Adam Harris, CEO of the National Autism Charity, as I am speaking to me earlier. Minister Niall Collins, can I get your reaction first to Adam Harris's views on what Matty McGrath had to say in the Dáil during the week?
Well, I agree with him. I was very disappointed to read and to now hear Matty McGrath's comments in relation to people who have a condition around autism. You cannot stigmatise people, you cannot label people or stereotype people. There has been obviously huge advances in diagnosis, in medical diagnosis over the years, particularly since the 90s. So to try to minimise and wave away people's concerns, I think is really wrong, and I think he should reflect on that, and I think he should apologise to people who have taken offence in relation to that.
All right. Well, we did contact him for comment. He wasn't available today. He did, however, say to the Irish Daily Mail that he says you must be able to question why there are so many cases, and NGOs and groups that get plenty of money off the government seem to be controlling the narrative and decide what we can and can't talk about. Circa Clark, that doesn't sound like an apology to me.
No, it absolutely doesn't. And I wear two hats, Colin, when we talk about this, because I am a very proud autism mommy. Half of my children are on the spectrum. Two of my children are autistic. I'm also a party spokesperson on education. I was in the chamber when those words came through Deputy McGrath's mouth, and I was absolutely shocked as an individual that somebody in our parliament would choose to use that language in such a way. People who are autistic may live in the same world as what we do, but they experience it incredibly differently to what we do. And that is a daily struggle that those people have to go through. And to mention NGOs in that so-called apology in the tone that was mentioned is deeply, deeply unhelpful, because it is a lot of those NGOs who work with autistic people to make their world that little bit better for them, that little bit brighter and that little bit more welcoming for them. I don't think he was right. I think he... his experience or him saying he'd never met anybody who was autistic as a child, I would guarantee that he did. He just didn't recognise it, that he didn't know what it was. Or if it was a very unusual situation where he didn't know anybody who was autistic, it was because they weren't in the community where they should have been.
All right. And thanks indeed for sharing your own personal experience with us as well. Richard Boyd Barrett, you've heard those remarks. I don't know whether you heard them during the week. What did you make of them?
I didn't hear them, but I think they're absolutely bizarre and fairly insulting, really, for children with autism, and a complete failure to just understand that we have diversity. We have neurodiversity, and that actually children with autism in the past were very, very badly treated, essentially. Yeah. And it's only because finally there's a recognition that there is diversity, that you don't have to subscribe to some notion of a norm in order to be treated with all the rights and supports that you deserve as a human being and as a child. So it's pretty bizarre stuff, but it's kind of indicative of where some of this conspiracy stuff leads, heading backwards. But the key issue, to be honest, is providing the supports, and the cuts in July provision are terrible. We had a debate in the Dáil this week more generally about special needs education. We've seen cuts in special needs education. We held meetings recently around the country in special needs, and we were absolutely overrun with families who, all of whom, tell the same story, that their entire life is based on a struggle, on being on waiting lists for supports, for assessments, for therapies.
I just want to get Niall Collins' response to that, what was raised by Adam Harris. This cut from €45 on the non-pay grant to schools, from €45 to €30, why is that cut being made?
Well, it's important to point out that the overall budget of €40 million for the running of the summer provision is intact. And the summer provision is very, very important, as Adam Harris has outlined. If you look at 2023 being the last reference year, 1,400 schools signed up to it, and more than 50,000 children took part in the summer programme. That's up from a figure of about 13,000 children who took part in 2019.
Would you accept that the budget is almost notional, because A, it never gets spent, and B, as Adam Harris was saying there, it's up to the schools to sign up to them voluntarily. There's no compulsion on schools to provide these summer programmes.
Well, I would echo his call for schools to think about it and to sign up, and we have extended the deadline to allow schools to sign up now out to the 17th of May.
How is cutting the grant going to incentivise people to sign up?
Well, we want the grant to go as far as possible to accommodate as many people as possible, and the rate in special schools is staying the same, as you know, at 45 euros, it's €60, but in non-special schools it's been reduced back to 30 euros. The department are just trying to, I suppose, achieve more people into the scheme if possible, and they've pointed out to me, and it's not my area of expertise, but he pointed out to me the normal capitation rate in a normal school is approximately €5 per week, whereas as part of the summer provision is €30 per week.
All right. Sir Clark, first of all, should schools be made to offer this, and should the grant be left at the level it is at €45?
Absolutely. I actually think the grant should have increased slightly under 45 this year, given the level of increased expenditure that we've seen. But we do need to look at how it is that we actually operate the summer programme. Most people remember a number of years ago that there was very limited criteria for a child to access this, and that was expanded, and that was absolutely welcomed. So while you have children with additional educational needs in their special schools, children are there as well, you also have the DESH camps, which are really important for children who may be vulnerable to educational disadvantage. So it covers a lot more than what it would have done previously, and I very much welcome that change that took place there. But I do think we need to move more to what the autism committee report actually asked for, and that was for this to be considered an essential service, for this to be based on a rights-based programme, which is not what it is at the moment. So the question needs to be asked is, how do we actually get to that point? We know, particularly children who are autistic, they benefit hugely from being with their peers. during the summer months, and the summer can be very long. The parents will speak of a lack of respite care, they'll speak of regressions, and so too will groups such as I Am and others. So how is it that we actually counter that, and how is it that we can actually work with schools to bring them to a place where the vast majority of them are actually providing?
And if you're talking about a rights-based approach, and I'm sorry to interrupt you on this, does a rights-based approach effectively mean making it compulsory for schools to offer it?
I'm not a big fan of the term compulsory at this point, because I think more can be done by government and more can be done by the department. Last year, they put in a part-time coordinator to work with schools to explain the changes that had taken place to entice them to come into the programme, and that did work to a certain extent. But more can absolutely be done by the department to further that work that was been done to get us to that place where the vast majority of summer provision is actually being provided in schools. There will always be an element of need for the home-based programme, absolutely. But where you have, at the moment, you have a significant number of parents and children who have no option but to use the home-based programme. And again, if you're talking about children who have autism, they need the peers around them. They need that social element to ensure that when they go back to school in September, that they're at their very best.
All right. Niall Collins, if the grant isn't spent in its entirety, if the budget's not spent in its entirety, then this cut from 45 to 30 isn't really making a real saving, is it? So wouldn't it be better to keep the grant intact to incentivise people to sign up, and then you would have a workable, almost pilot programme to show any other schools who are wavering?
Well, look, I think the scheme is set up for this year. So let's see how this year's go.
It's not paid out till the autumn, though, is it? So it's not too late to change it.
Well, I don't know that detail, if it can be changed or not. The applications are open. And as I said, I'm encouraging other schools to voluntary opt in. And the deadline is pushed out until the 17th of May. So I think let's see how it goes this year. And certainly we have to take the learnings from this year and from previous years and exactly look at what Deputy Circa Clark is articulating there also, as somebody who has a far greater knowledge about it than I.
Okay. All right. We're going to take a break. We're going to have a look at accommodation for people seeking international protection after this.
Saturday with Colm O'Mungon on RTE Radio 1.